This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. As a new kingdom rises to take over from Babylon, Daniel has a vision of the future of his people. Daniel's people would get to return to Israel, but they face a difficult future. Daniel's vision disturbed him, so he turned to God for answers. Today, Pastor Sam Horn will conclude a sermon titled, He Knows the Future, from Daniel chapter 8. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
And they're predicted right here in the text. And these two kingdoms, kings that come from these two kingdoms, are going to constantly be at war with each other. And the reason that is important, because if one kingdom wanted to get to the other kingdom with his army, he had to march through a middle ground. And the middle ground between these two kingdoms was a beautiful, glorious land called Israel. And if you've ever been to Israel, you know that if you want to get to Egypt from anywhere, you've got to go through Israel. And if you want to get from Egypt to anywhere, you've got to go through Israel. And so these two kingdoms that are being mentioned here in passing in Daniel chapter 8 actually came about. And here's the point I want to make again to us. What Daniel is looking at that is still future, we stand over here from our location and we look back and it's what? It's history. When Daniel was way back at the end of the first kingdom looking forward, none of this had happened yet. When we look back, most of it has happened. And so Daniel is looking forward to prophecy. We are looking back on fulfillment. You say, why does that matter? Because the God who told Daniel the future didn't just tell Daniel the future because he knew it. He told Daniel the future because he planned it. He orchestrated it. Well, that brings us to the focal point. I mean, we've looked at the ram, so there's our wide-angle lens. And the ram gets tumbled down by this angry goat. There's a little bit of a narrower view, the kingdom of Greece. And then all of a sudden, it gets really narrow. There are four small kingdoms that now rise up. And now we're going to get really narrow, and we're going to come to one of those kingdoms. Remember I told you there were two that mattered? There's the kings of Egypt, the Ptolemies, and then there's the king that took over Babylon and Persia, and that was the Seleucid king. And we're going to look at his kingdom. The rest of the vision is about that kingdom and that third empire. Remember the third empire, Greece, subdivides into four little kingdoms, and now we're looking at one of those kingdoms, the Seleucid kingdom. And we're actually going to zero in on that kingdom, and we're going to go way down into that kingdom to one of its kings. So what we did is we started out with this wide angle. It got narrower. It got narrower. And by the time we get halfway through the vision, we are looking all the way down in this little kingdom that makes up the larger kingdom of Greece. And we're looking at one king. And we don't know his name yet, but we do know this. He is described as a wicked little horn. Look at verse 9. Out of those four kingdoms, out of those four rulers, out of one of them comes a little horn, and he grew exceedingly great toward the south and toward the east and toward the glorious land. And in verse 10, it grew great even to the host of heaven, and some of the host and some of the stars it threw down to the ground and trampled on them. And by the way, let's just stop there and remember something. You remember back in Genesis 15, God told Abraham, I'm going to give you descendants, and they're going to be as numerous as what? The stars of heaven. Israel and the people of Israel are sometimes referred to in the Bible as God's stars. Israel, in different places in your Bible, is described as God's host. The word host is the word for army. The Israelites were God's stars and God's army, and this king, this little arrogant tyrant of a ruler that we're looking in on, is going to come against God's stars and God's army, and for a time, he is going to have victory over them. He is going to cast them down. He is going to trample on them. In verse 11, this arrogant ruler is going to become great. He's going to exalt himself even as the prince of that army. Who is the prince of the army of Israel? And the answer is God. This arrogant little ruler from that tiny little kingdom in Greece is going to make himself equal to God. And for a time, he's going to come into that beautiful land that belongs to God, and he's going to tear down God's stars, and he's going to trample down God's army, God's people. And he's going to do more than that. The regular burnt offering was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was overthrown. And the army will be given over to it with the burnt offering because of transgression. And this ruler will throw truth to the ground, and he will prosper. I mean, this is really stunning. Here's this little arrogant ruler in the third kingdom, and he rises up and he starts acting aggressively to everybody. He is unstoppable. He has great power and great might. And he comes against God's people, God's stars, and he tramples them down. He destroys them. He exalts himself to be equal with their leader, God. He takes away the sacrifices of God, and he defiles the temple of God. And Daniel wants to know why. And God says, well, let me tell you why, Daniel. All of this is happening because of transgressions. All of this is happening because of transgressions. Look at verse 12. The army of God, the host, will be given over to this ruler along with the burnt offering because of transgression. Wait a second. Whose transgression are we talking about that brought all of this renewed persecution and devastation against God's people? Whose transgression? And if you've been following along the storyline, it's Israel's ongoing transgression. Why are they in Babylon? We went all the way back to chapter 1. Why did God give the people of Israel into Nebuchadnezzar's hand? Why did he give the temple vessels into Nebuchadnezzar's hand? Why did he let Nebuchadnezzar destroy Jerusalem and destroy the temple? And the answer is because of the rebellion and the sin of his people. And God disciplined them. What did the writer of Hebrews says? Despise not the chastening of the Lord. Here, God is chastening his people for 70 years. We've been looking at four faithful men who in those 70 years stood for God, were faithful to God. They refused to eat food offered to idols. They refused to bow down to a graven image. They refused to pray to anybody other than God, and they paid a horrific price for it, but God preserved them. But that's four of God's faithful people. What about the rest of them? The book of Jeremiah describes what went on in those 7 years. God's people became even more rebellious. They became even more angry at God. Well, if you're going to take away our temple, and you're going to take away our city, and you're going to take away our people, why should we keep serving you? Jeremiah, stop talking to us about repenting. Stop talking to us about worshiping a God who did this to us. And they literally at one point say to Jeremiah, Jeremiah, we are sick of you keep talking about God. We are done with the God who treated us this way. They actually say this in the book of Jeremiah. We had it better when we were worshiping the queen of heaven. That's the moon. We had it better when we were worshiping the moon. And so you know what, Jeremiah? You just stop. We We've already talked to our wives, and they're going to start baking the cakes we used to offer to the moon goddess, and we're going back to that worship. This is after the 70 years of captivity. You say, well, what about when they went back into the land? Well, read the prophet Haggai and read the prophet Malachi, and you're going to find out that even after Daniel's day, when these people go back to the land, they continue to sin against God. And God says to Daniel, let me tell you why at the end of the third kingdom, this little arrogant tyrant is going to come up and he's going to have unusual success in the persecution of my people. You don't want to know. You want to know why, Daniel? For the same reason I gave them into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. I'm going to let this little tyrant come against them for their transgressions. Wow, here we are all the way over here. Looking back, and how many times has God put us under discipline? How many times has God got our attention because of some sin or something we're doing against him, and we come under that discipline, and what we should be doing is saying, God, thank you for disciplining, because that means I'm your son. And instead, we chafe against the discipline of God. We chafe against the hardness of the discipline. I mean, how many times do people say, well, if this is how God is going to treat me, I am done with God. If this is how it's going to be, and this is what God is doing, then I'm done with church, I'm done with Bible, I'm done with worship, I'm done with God. I hope, as your pastor, and as one of the elders on a team of men who love you, that would never happen to one of us. You need to pray for me that would never happen to me. And I need to pray for you that it would never happen to you. But this is a real danger. And this is one of the major lessons in this book. Well, that brings us to the third lens, and that is the interpretation. Look at verses 15 through 25. There's a question that's been raised. Daniel sees all of this. He's devastated. But all of a sudden, he hears a conversation that's going on in heaven between two angels or two angelic beings. And one of the angels, you can see this back in verse 13, one of the angels, one of the holy ones, says to the other about this horrible vision that he's seeing about the burnt offering being stopped and the transgression that makes desolate and the giving over the sanctuary. And he has a question. How long? How long is this going to go on? And the other angelic being answers, for 2,300 evenings and mornings, and then the sanctuary will be restored. In other words, there was nobody to stop the power of the ram from destroying Babylon. There was nobody to stop the power of Greece from destroying Persia. But there is somebody who's going to put an end to what's going on here. There's going to be a limited time, and then somebody is going to come and put an end to all of this. And you know who that is? We met him back in chapter 7. He's the Son of Man. You know him as Jesus. And he is going to come at the end of the third kingdom and at the beginning of the fourth kingdom, and he is going to put a stop to what is going on here. Look at verses 15 through 17, and we'll see the significance of this vision. Daniel sees the vision and seeks to understand it in verse 15, and there stood one before him as having the appearance of man, and he hears this voice saying, Gabriel. So this is the first time in the Bible we have an angel identified by name. He's going to show up. We're going to interact with Gabriel from here on out. Later we're going to find out a second name. But this angel is given the task of saying to Daniel, listen, I'm going to interpret the vision, and here's what I want you to know. The vision is not for your time. The vision is for something that is going to happen at the end of a kingdom. There is a kingdom, and at the end of that kingdom, this is all going to happen, and we already know what that kingdom is. It's the third kingdom. So there's a whole fourth kingdom to come. So this is actually the angel Gabriel saying, listen, this is not about the final end. This is about things are going to happen at the end of this third kingdom. When you get to the end, well, Daniel's 400 years away from that. What he's seeing here is 400 years to the future. And Daniel, what you need to know is 400 years from now, approximately, this little tyrant, this arrogant ruler is going to come up. And he's going to be a king of bold face. Look at verse 23. Who understands riddles. His power will be great, but not by his own power. He will cause fearful destruction. He will succeed in what he does. And he will destroy mighty men and the people who are the saints. By his cunning, he will make deceit prosper. And in his own mind, he will become great. He will even rise up against the prince of princes. And he shall be broken, but not by human hand. Somebody's going to intervene. Well, history tells us who this man was. There was a man named Antiochus the IV, and he named himself Epiphanes. And so you know him as Antiochus Epiphanes. He came to power in a period of time in Israel's history where the temple had been rebuilt, the people, everything Daniel saw had happened, and here we are, and at the end of this third kingdom, Antiochus Epiphanes comes to power. And he is constantly coming into Israel on his way to beat up Egypt, the kingdom of Ptolemy, and he constantly suffers defeat from time to time in Egypt, and as he comes back, he's so mad that he takes his wrath out on Israel. And he decides that he is going to make the kingdom of Israel his kingdom. And he's going to make everybody in that kingdom like him. And so he introduces all kinds of new customs. He deceives people into following him. And then he does something so arrogant that you'd hardly believe it. He decides that he is going to be the God that people worship. And that word Epiphanes in his name means the manifestation of a God. And that's what he decides he's going to do. And since he's a god, he's going to go into that land and he's going to go into the main temple, the temple in Jerusalem, and he's going to dedicate that temple to the god he represents on earth, the god Zeus. And he is going to take that temple and he's going to offer a sacrifice that is so abominable on the altar of that sacrifice that it's going to make the temple defiled and desecrated because of this abomination that has happened. And so he comes in and he offers a pig on the altar of God and it defiles the temple. You say, for how long? For 2,300 mornings and evenings. This is amazing to me. If you take mornings and evenings, that's one day. So 2,300 mornings and evenings is 1,150 days, which is just a little more than 3 years. And from the time that Antiochus Epiphanes offered the pig on the altar and desecrated it to the time that Judas Maccabees rose up and rescued the temple, cleansed the temple, and rededicated the temple was exactly 3 years. And you know that rededication of that temple as the Feast of Hanukkah. We celebrate it every year, the Feast of Lights. And so we look at all of this history that Daniel was looking forward as prophecy, and we know that God is in control. And that brings us to the very final thing. How does Daniel respond to all of this? What is the spiritual application of all of this? And if you look at verse 26 and 27, in spite of all of this confusion, there is persevering service. Look at verse 27. Despite his distress, Daniel rose and went about the king's business. What are you and I supposed to do as we look forward to the horrific things that Jesus told us would come in our own future? Here's Daniel, and he's looking ahead at the horrific things God said was going to come in his future. How are we supposed to report, or respond rather, when we look ahead to the horrific things God says are in store in our future? Second Timothy, God said, evil men and seducers and imposters are going to get what? Worse. How are we supposed to respond? And I would suggest to you that we should respond the very way that Daniel did. We need to keep doing the king's business. So how in the world am I going to do that? Years ago, I mentored under a guy named Les Olala. And I can remember getting really frustrated from time to time about things that were going on in the ministry. I was executive vice president in the organization that he led. And I was frustrated about this or frustrated about that. And one day he called me and he said, hey, I want to take you to coffee. And so we went to coffee and he said, I want to ask you a question. Now, Les loved hockey. He was from northern Michigan. He was a massive hockey player. And he said, I want to ask you a question. How do you win hockey games? I'm like, I felt like saying, what are you talking about? I got stuff to do over here. You want to talk about hockey? I don't know. You got to have strategy. He goes, no. How does a score get on the board? And the answer he was looking for that I was struggling to give was this. The way a point gets on the board is you got to put the puck in the net. Right? And he said, you know, all kinds of distractions are going to happen to keep you from doing that. Somebody's going to knock into you. Something's going to happen over here. Somebody's going to cry foul. But you just got to keep your eye on that puck, and you got to get the puck in the net. I found out they had given this talk to a lot of people, but I was getting it that day. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, if you're going to put the puck in the net in your life, you're going to have to keep your eye on the mission. No matter what, it doesn't matter how fearful the future, it doesn't matter how bad it gets, you have to keep your eye on the mission. You have to keep your passion for Christ hot. You can't let the future sort of quench your passion. You got to keep your eye on the mission, you got to keep your passion for Christ, and you got to keep your relationships right. You got to keep your relationship right. And then go out and put the puck in the net. I think if Daniel were here this morning and he would look back, he would just shake his head. He says, you know, everything I saw back in the city of Susa has happened. And I'm just telling you that God did everything I said. And I would have some counsel to you as you stand where I stood and you look forward at a future that's uncertain and that's turbulent and chaotic and troublesome. You need to do what I did. You need to keep your eye on the mission. You need to keep your passion for Christ. And you need to keep your relationships right. And you need to put the puck in the net and let the heathen rage. Because God is going to send somebody to put an end to all of this. And it's the same person he sent the first time. At the end of that third kingdom, God sent his son in the fullness of time, and he put an end to our sin and its power over us. And at the end of the fourth kingdom, he's going to send that same son back, and he's going to put an end to all of the rebellion that goes on around us. And he's going to establish a kingdom that will last forever. And until he comes, let's you and I do what Daniel did. Let's go about the king's business.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. Today's speaker is Dr. Sam Horn. He's the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join one of our morning worship services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. every Sunday. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about today's message or about Palmetto Baptist Church, reach out to radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is recorded by the audio team at PBC and produced by CJ Billieu. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.